Renee was putting doilies in the what we call the
Lingerie?
Well, no, in the lounge area, okay. right outside of sanctuary. So it was all fixed up. It just had home grandma's furniture in it. Do you know what I mean? Right, and it had doilies everywhere, and so. I was taking doilies up, just, you know, and then put them in a room or something. And then I found out later my wife was doing the same thing. Because it's just, how do you attract young people to grandma's church? And so we found out but then they would show up the next week. It was more of them. It's like somebody had a doily lace production company. And they would just show back up. So we finally figure out. That it's Renee. And so we have to talk. So now I feel kind of some way because she's so sweet and, you know, everything. So we talk about it. And she was gracious because I don't think I've ever checked back years later how mad she was. But, you know, we just explained. It's like some of this furniture has to go, right? It's old.
These blue chairs are cool. They look old, but they're like retro.
Oh, yeah, that's retro. Cool. Yes. Yeah.
This
yes,
is so cool.
And even there's still some pieces down there that are old. Mm-hmm. It was not an oldness,
yeah.
But it's like it's an overwhelming old and mm-hmm. and yeah, and it's like you can see the cobwebs almost, right? Mm-hmm. And so we talked our way through that. And she was, you know, as she is gracious and everything. It's like we're not gonna do doilies at the church. And, all right, okay. So yeah. Not style, but standards.
How have you seen the church change? Well, you kind of answered some of this. And the Peace Park is like a big thing.
Yeah.
But how have you seen the church change and develop since you stepped in?
I would... there is a woman from our church in Los Angeles who has grandchildren in the D.C. area. And so they were, you know, they were very sorry, the whole church was, that we were leaving and all of that. And so she made herself the representative for our old church, Oceanside. So she would be out here, like, in the first year we were here, she was here two, three, four times, maybe, like maybe once a quarter, seeing her grandkid. And she made a point of coming over here. As I understand it from one of the other pastors, we were a team of pastors back there. She came back and said to him, we have to get Michael and Gail out of there. We have to bring them back. The atmosphere is terrible. Mm-hmm. The attitude, the ethos is just terrible. We gotta get them back. Right. And so
just trying to protect you guys.
Yeah, it's like this was a mistake. How did almost like how did you all let them leave and go there? Right. That kind of thing. So like a year later, she re-reported and her re-report was it's a totally different place that the people are different, you know, and I don't know if she recognizes, but the physical plant was different too, but her report was more about the people are different. There's not an oddness. She spoke about how, you know, her first couple of times here, different people would come up to her, pull her off to the side and do their complaint and about somebody else in the church or do their rendition of what had happened to the church over the last 15 years, that kind of stuff. It's like, this is weird. And you're really working to get me to come back, aren't you? And so, you know, she was happy to have a updated report. And that's kind of how I would answer the question. You know, it's one thing if it looks better, one thing if it smells better and all of that. But if you don't have the sense of warmth and genuine welcoming, there isn't a other-mindedness in the atmosphere, then, you know, we just put, what's that old saying, too old for you guys, we just put lipstick on a pig, you know? And so, and then, you know, in that, as you mentioned, we discovered, you know, because everything, when I got here, everything was about stewardship, right? It's a great building. We're not stewarding it well. We have a good history. We're not stewarding it well. Then after a year, I get to walk through the woods and find out that we're not stewarding our property well. That there's, this is like really a forest. We should be doing something with this. And so because we had started the other journey of healing, healing the forest was possible. But the one had to come first. Then the third, or that kind of happened simultaneously because of the flood and other things, was we got to be a healer in the community, an anchor in the community. So our relationship with this zip code, our relationship with, you know, the let's say a square mile or two around us is thoroughly different. Yeah, and so now we aren't just a place people drive by. We're a destination for worship, for education, you know, for learning about Christianity, for learning about healthy eating, for food, for vaccination. You know, we're a destination now. And again, if we don't succeed in healing, in forgiving, because some people were still resentful, which is part of the healing, I guess you would say. If all of that doesn't happen, if I don't concentrate on us, and if we don't bring the opportunity to heal and the pieces of Christianity that we may be talking about, but we're not executing and putting them into shoe leather, putting them into flesh and blood, then we can't do anything with the forest. We can't do anything with the community. We can't be connected to the schools around us and offer them support during COVID. We aren't then a learning center and a training center, as it were. We can't do research, you know. Our relationships now are with USDA Forest Service and University of Delaware and the Audubon, right?
Audubon
Society.
Huh? The Audubon Society.
Yeah. Right, they're a no fooling, very close partner. Smithsonian over the last 18 months has become a partner. They're getting ready to do a whole nother thing.
Martin.
Yes.
Sorry to interrupt. Are you expecting Ron Willoughby?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Put him up.
No, not up here.
Okay.
I'll meet him. You can put him in my office.
Okay.
He ain't supposed to be here until 2:00. But put him in my office. Ask him if he needs some water, please. All right. So, you know, what I say, Smithsonian and a bunch of other local and national entities, mm-hmm. all of that flows out of us getting healed mm-hmm. and being healthy and asking, you know, Lord, what can we do to be good stewards of what we have and what we are? And licking your wounds for a decade or more, you know, at some point you got to be healed and get rolling. Everybody gets hurt. Everybody gets knocked down. Everybody gets, you know, depressed and has to wander through melancholy, et cetera. But, you know, we fall down, but we get up again. And so that's what we finally decided was necessary to do. And so we holding it down, as the kids would say, over here on the southwest edge of Baltimore City. Yay for Jesus.
That was bringing to our next question. How did you, can you tell us a story of like how you found the partners? Like how was that established?
Yeah. Most of our partners, if not all of them, that are you know, kind of noteworthy to other people are related to the fact that we have 10 acres of forest. I don't know. I mean, some of it would happen if we had a half acre, you know, but well, what would we have? We'd have a garden. So that's only of so much interest to other people. But, you know, I ended up finding out that 10 acres in city limits, forested, is a treasure trove. It's an amazing thing. You know, I have professionals telling me I've never worked on this much land at one time in the in city limits, right? And so I increasingly learned to be in as much awe as professionals were about this. And so then you have to identify. And we did the identification, right? We said that this patch of land was a first of forest. Because again, before that, people riding by it every day, every week on their way downtown or wherever. And it just looked like D-A, woods. The woods, it's just the woods. It's just more unkept forest area in the city of Baltimore. And so once we principally identified this is our property, this is our forest, then it's like, this is a park. Then we did some research, and so one of our folks was like, came back to me, he's like, Pastor, this should be a peace park. I said, you know, my thing was, that's a thing? Yeah, it means something to be a peace park. Okay, let's run that. Let's let that unfold. Let's develop that. And so we went around, you know, 10 acres, but all of this, then we find out that what part of what made it look so bad was ash trees were being attacked, right? And by this emerald boar. And so that was a thing that was going on all up and down the coast and beyond, right? In the mid-Atlantic and beyond. And then we have invasive vines that were sucking life out of other trees. So now we find out that the peace park is being choked to death, right, by these two entities. And it's affecting kind of everything. And I'm going around talking about Steel Meadow Peace Park and telling people what it is and where it is and what we're going to do with it and meditation stations, and we're going to be doing retreats and this, that, and the other. And a lot of my language, you know, lended toward in the process of, because we, as far as I'm concerned, we were, right? This is how we were thinking. And so I start meeting people. I'm getting invited to things, right? And all you have to say is 10 acres, right? And again, it's like a child with a loaded weapon, right? You don't even know what you have in your hands. And so because we were self-determinant, because we already had a sense of purpose and a sense of vision about what to do with this, people, I think, were attracted to that. And because we also were not, I don't know, stuffy or something. So we were, there was a fluidity to our conversations. So people could see that we were open to discussing and to experimenting and researching what and how to move forward. We just kept having, and because again, my own background is such that I wasn't just a church guy. So I knew what to say, how to say stuff, how to cultivate conversations, how to, you know, with corporate folks and, you know, other entities, as it were, institutions and stuff. So we just kept going around talking to people. And it wasn't at all hard to get people to come and walk the park with us. And you just keep providing vision and descriptions and, you know, telling the tale and telling the story. The city was gloriously helpful to us. There's the Office of Sustainability, and then we got involved with the Resiliency Hub and all of that, and then different NGOs, and different corporations and state, and very much so the federal government, and a number of higher learning institutions. And so, you know, you just keep talking to people and letting people in. If you're healthy, you're secure. If you're secure, you can listen to other thoughts, opinions, suggestions, points of view, perspectives, and not be overly threatened by it, but enhanced and delighted by it. So we allowed people to be a part of dreaming with us about how to execute our original goals and how to add to them and develop them. And so the Bible talks about those who would be who want friends should show themselves friendly. And so in retrospect, as I'm thinking about it, listening to you all's questions, we were friendly about what we wanted to do. And we were also clear about what we wanted to do. And we were also, and that resulted in us being bold. And so it's like, come on, let's play together. We got 10 acres. And this is a time where not only are we concerned, we being corporately all around, about the planet, about climate, but there seems to be a heightened concern about greening urban areas. You know, how do we, and things having to do with density and with canopy and with you know, just air quality and heat index and all of that. And so we plugged into a lot of that. It was just good timing, I think, as well. Yeah, we just were able to make those things work.
And what was the order of... Mr. Al told us when we first visited that, like, she gave us the first tour of the Peace Park, that there is a meeting that someone connects you to, and you kind of, like, told the people in the room, like, look around, I'm the only, like, why am I the only, like, person of color? Was that, would you say, like, a launch into the vision of the Peace Park, or, like, these networks, or what was that story?
It was a launch. It helped to create these networks. That meeting happened because of the flood. My attendant said that. So there was a couple of NYU students that came down after the flooding, and they were interested in the story of what happened here in this area versus Ellicott City, mm-hmm. and the amount of attention Ellicott City had received versus here. And they were doing something for NPR up there or something. And so they interviewed me several times. And they kept in touch. And one of them, just kind of out of the blue, you know, some months later, said there's some type of, you know, conference in downtown Baltimore at one of our historic hotels, and invited me to come to it. And I went back and forth, and I finally decided to go, mostly because this kid, this young person, had invited me, thought it was a good idea, right? And I don't know if they knew what, because it was basically a technical conference. And so I wasn't the only person of color, but I was the only United States person of color. There was a few others who were from, like, Brazil. It was an international conference. And but it was practitioners. It was scientific. You know, they were doing all that talk, you know, and where you had to listen to the first guy to interpret for you what the second guy meant, mm-hmm. right? Right. And so I'm in one of these meetings, and there's a couple hundred people in it, and, you know, there's a panel, and they're talking, and then they're going back and forth. And I forget who, but for some reason, somebody asked me to comment or something. And I'm looking around the room, and, you know, there's some olive, but most of it is just straight up white, right? Mm-hmm. And it's in downtown Baltimore. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, and they're talking about urban, mm-hmm. right? And they're talking about environmental justice and all of this stuff. And I'm like, and I didn't say it this harsh, but I was saying, y'all got to get y'all stuff together. Y'all talking about all of that. And this room in the middle of Baltimore is as white as cotton, right? And I don't know why there aren't two things, more people of color in here. But secondly, I'm the only lay person in this room. I don't understand, but I've been understanding because I've been talking to people like y'all since we have this part. Y'all like talking to each other about stuff, right? Scientists like talking to scientists, researchers like talking to scientists and researchers, academics like talking about, same. Y'all call us regular people or lay people or whatever. Y'all should be talking to us. There should be some lay people at this conference. If you all want to talk about environmental justice and you want to talk about, the city and density and asthma and all, we're not just patients or lab rats. And that's kind of the tone that I've been getting, I'm saying to them, not just from this meeting, but just as I've been going around and talking to people. So you all have a scientific bent, a research bent. You don't know how to talk to folk. I don't know what y'all do at Thanksgiving, at your home. Y'all don't know how to talk to people. So some of this isn't that you don't want to. You're not developing your skills, your social skills, right? And so that's part of it. I ain't calling y'all racist or nothing. It ain't got nothing to do with that. You're just uncomfortable, right? So anyway, I finished, reprimanding, 200 people. And so they received it well. But I didn't, I never raised my hand. Somebody asked me, somebody whispered to somebody, that's a pastor from Baltimore. And, and of course, I'm sure they said, he has 10 acres,
like your ticket in.
Yeah, I'm serious. That's, I felt like I didn't even have to, everybody,
Everyone knew you.
Yeah, and you always have to have a ID. And all after, I got 10 acres, man. Oh, you the one. Yeah. Park my car for me, I met several panelists after that, right? There was four or five of them. So they, we gathered and then they, they wanted to follow up. And they were in different parts, federal government, the city, NGO. They represent all of that. And some of those are partners with us till today. So that was really a kickoff, right, and it started with a couple of graduate students in New York. Because I think it would have taken a heck of a long time to get into those spaces just randomly from here to there. Because even nomenclature, right? I got to learn what things were called, right? I knew about justice, but I didn't know about environmental justice before I started hanging out with these folks.
Thank you, Pastor Michael.
You're welcome.
I want to hold you up. We know you have your other meeting. Now,
right, and it just hit me. Pastor Ron came early to chit chat with me.
Oh no!
No, it wasn't scheduled, but I just came early. He came early to chit chat.